radar down to the neighborhood level, plus instant push notifications for severe weather watches and warnings. Go to the App Store and search Rich Thomas Weather. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
These are headlines from the Montgomery Advertiser Newsroom. I'm Wendell Jay. U.S. District Judge has ruled that Doyle Lee Hamm's request to block his execution this week won't play. Hamm maintains the veins in his arms have been damaged by lymphoma and hepatitis in recent years and that lethal injection would be very painful. He's scheduled to be executed Thursday for the 87 murder of motel clerk Patrick Cunningham. Hamm's attorney has asked the judge to reconsider and will appeal. Montgomery Water Works completed repair on a 6-inch water main that broke in the 300 block of Merrimack Drive just off McGee Road. The break created a large hole in the pavement, threw debris through the windows of a home and a vehicle. The house had water damage. Officials said the pipe had been patched with clay in past years, which is what broke. There was no leak or warning before the main burst. And 2018 will mark 50 years of Fred Rogers in America. PBS will have a feature documentary on Rogers. There will also be a postage stamp and a feature film starring Tom Hanks. That's headlines. I'm Wendell Jay.
The following is a paid program. All content is provided by Dan Morris Productions and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WACB Radio, Blue Water Broadcasting, or Liberty Acquisitions 825.
At Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars, it's all about buying confidence and trust. For over 50 years, they've offered a great selection of the finest and best hand-picked cars in the area. These cars have passed a rigid multi-point inspection and are backed by proof pricing and the Jack Ingram Signature Car Stamp of Approval. What is proof pricing? That's Jack Ingram's best price, simple and clear, with true price comparisons from third-party leaders. And when it comes to saving you money, there's nothing better than seeing the proof. Choose from the largest selection of Nissan, Volkswagen, Volvo, Audi, and Porsche certified vehicles in our area or shop hundreds of other pre-owned mates starting as low as $7,000. And if it doesn't fit in your garage or your spouse doesn't like it, you have 3 days to return it for a full refund. Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars has hundreds of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your needs. And if by some small chance they don't have it, they will find it for you and deliver it to your driveway. Confidence and trust is a Jack Ingram Signature Used Car guarantee.
Come see me, Tip Thames, at Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars on Eastern Boulevard or shop online at jackingram.com.
You know electrical fires account for an estimated 51,000 home fires each year, with over half caused by faulty outlets and outdated wiring. Don't put your home and family at risk. Call Mr. Electric of Montgomery for all your electrical repair and installation needs. The experienced service professionals at Mr. Electric respect your time, your budget, and your home. They offer upfront pricing, emergency services, and appointments on your schedule. From fixing a faulty switch to upgrading an electrical panel, you'll know exactly what you're paying for. Call today and ask about our free home safety inspection. Trust your family's safety to the experts at Mr. Electric of Montgomery, where we'll do it right.
The River Region's first and only news talk station on FM. Live, local talk. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Schools across the country have been dealing with threats after last week's attack.
In DeSoto County, Mississippi, two 16-year-old boys are behind bars on charges of cyber stalking following an alleged threat to a high school. Additional security added this week in Hamilton County, Indiana, at Carmel High School. In Akron, Ohio, a student made a social media threat posting, "I hate Florida, part two."
London-based lawyer Alex van der Zwaan has been charged with lying to the special counsel's office about work he did for Ukraine. Van der Zwaan is the son-in-law of a Russian oligarch.
Pharmacy chain Rite Aid is being carved up after Walgreens agreed to buy part of it. Grocery store giant Albertsons, which owns brands like Safeway and Vons, now says it'll take the rest.
Took a few phone calls, but Jeanette Fox in Westchester, Pennsylvania, got her son excused from jury duty. He's 11 years old.
The Trump administration is going to allow the sale of short-term, cheap, and less comprehensive health care plans. The policies are less expensive because they are not subject to the requirements of the Affordable Care Act, like mandating those essential health benefits such as emergency, maternity, or mental health care.
30 states under weather alerts right now.
It's the Dan Morris Show. Join the conversation by calling 272-9228. And now, here's Dan Morris.
Welcome back, everyone. News Time 93.1 FM, Dan Morris Show on a Wednesday. 272-9228. First-time callers need to let Joey, the producer, know. We'll get your name in for the drawing for the Fresh Market $50 gift card. $50 gift card from Fresh Market. Also, if you want to be a Sweet Creek Farm Market basket winner, just give us a call. That is open to any and everyone. We'll have a call-in guest at 1:30. I'm sorry, 2:30, they'll be talking about the Battle of Ramadi of 2006. This was a bloody, bloody place, and really looking forward to talking to this gentleman on the show today. We're going to have his book up on my website. I better check it out, make sure it's there, or check with John, and make sure we're making that happen. Let's pick off a couple of news items here. Tucker Carlson had Dan Bongino on, and talking about the kids and kind of what they we're perceiving. Now, this is not an attack of the kids, but there's their perception.
There's a huge controversy online that I'm hesitant even to wade in on, but I think it needs to be addressed, and it's over the protests led by the students.
Sure.
For whom all of us feel terrible, because you can't imagine anything worse than your kid's school getting shot up. But all of a sudden, you're seeing these kids involved in calls for very specific pieces of legislation. And the allegation has been that they are in some way in contact with organized anti-gun groups. And people who have suggested that have been denounced as immoral and heartless. And how dare you question these kids or attack them, which, for the record, I am certainly not doing.
Right.
But I think it raises interesting questions about how we make our law.
Right. You know, what's interesting about this is I'm with you 100%. If you are involved in a horrific, I mean, unimaginable tragedy like this, you absolutely, your voice should be heard. They are obviously important voices in what happened. But what I find ironic about it is a couple things. Number one, where I think their voices are most valuable, Tucker, are not on the components the media is paying attention to. In other words, supply side measures to get rid of guns.
Yes.
Where their voices would be valuable is, where were the signs missed? These students were there. They That's dealt with this point. Kid every day. But the media is focused more on a teenager's expertise in supply-side control measures for guns, which, Tucker, let's be candid, they probably have not studied a very complicated, layered issue. They absolutely, unequivocally have the right, and after what they've been through, we want to hear their voices. But the media is focusing on an agenda and not, ironically, where these kids could be.
So they're focused on an agenda, and he's absolutely right. They are focused on an agenda. An agenda is the banning of weapons. They may say, well, you know, we want everybody to have a gun. The question's going to be how you're going to get there and what constitutional rights are you going to take away, or are you going to defend it by telling us what the process that you're suggesting? And the kids have actually said, well, we're just telling you what we want. You tell us how to do it, type thing. They've kind of gotten to that point because they're asked questions about it and they can't answer it. Let's continue on with the discussion.
Using these kids in a kind of moral blackmail where you're not allowed to disagree or you're attacking the child, which is, of course, I can speak for myself, the last thing I would ever do as a father of four.
Yeah.
You would never attack the kid. You can disagree with other people's opinions without attacking them, but the press is conflating that and making it like you're not allowed to disagree, you're a bad person.
Well, did you notice the doublespeak here as well? When it comes to things like immigration rights, they don't seek subject matter expertise from parents who've been killed by illegal immigrants. When it comes to things like the victims of terrorist attacks, their voices, now, to be candid here, I get it. They can say, someone may come back and say, well, Republicans come out and they say, what about Kate's Law? Fine. But we gave them a voice and we followed it up with a substantive law, and we understand, and I'm saying to you, these kids should be heard. But the left-leaning media will not do the same. They will give these kids a platform to talk about these legislative issues, but they won't give anyone else on an issue that doesn't fit their agenda the exact
You're
same
totally
platform.
Totally right. Creepy propaganda outlets like CNN. I guess what I just disagree with is the idea that anybody who has an alternate view is removed from the conversation on moral grounds immediately. That is their play,
well,
always.
I mean, Tucker, it's all critical theory stuff. It's meant to minimize and put you... It wins the argument before the argument starts.
Exactly.
By making sure Tucker Carlson's a bad guy, therefore whatever Tucker Carlson says is therefore unworthy of the conversation.
Smart.
And that's what happens. And so what you do is you attack a person. That's why they're doing the Marco Rubio says something, and they just run over him. Scott, the governor, says something, they just run over him. NRA, just try to run over. Because those are the opponents, those are the opposition. And somebody's teaching them that. That is not coming naturally. The kid who beat up Marco Rubio and also Donald Trump, that somebody's feeding that to him. That's not coming, that's not organic, as we would say. Okay, so a couple of things here I'm going to try to get to. And that is Nunes and Tucker Carlson. But Nunes is now in phase two of the probe. And let's listen to what he's going to be talking about in the collusion narrative.
Media who assiduously serve them howl about Russian collusion and why we need a far-reaching, all-powerful investigation to uncover it, and how you're unpatriotic if you've got questions about that. Well, we got our investigation, and it has not found a whiff of evidence that anybody in the Trump campaign colluded with Vladimir Putin. So now these same people have been yelling at us for a year about this, have decided to forget they ever said anything like this. They're now claiming collusion was never the point at all. They just want to know more about what Russia was doing. You've requested a number of documents from federal agencies, intelligence and law enforcement agencies, and apparently haven't got them. Why is it so difficult to get facts from our government?
Well, it's been a challenge, as you know, the whole time. We've had to subpoena, we've had to threaten contempt. But this is what we're having a showdown between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And just going to what you talked about to open up this segment, the facts are not bearing out to what the Democrats wanted it to be, because we have found collusion. We found collusion between the Democrats, specifically the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee and the Russians. However, it doesn't seem to be like that. Nobody's interested in that collusion. We've also found felony leaks. Nobody seems to be interested in getting to the bottom of the felony leaks. So it's part of what the House Intelligence Committee, led by the Republicans, are trying to get to the bottom of,
right?
We're up against a lot of odds. We're not getting help from the Democrats in the House, and we're also not getting any help from the mainstream media.
You know, one thing I have to really admire Nunes for, he is very methodical. He's the tortoise that's out there. He just keeps plowing away, head down, and keeps going. He gets criticized, gets taken off the thing. I bet he just hates Adam Schiff. And he just keeps his head down and just keeps focused on the mission. And I think that I admire somebody who does that. He's really trying to get to the bottom of this. And every time he unearths stuff, he's finding new things. So let's continue on with this before we get to another member of Congress who's going to give us something to talk about.
So here's an example of a line going on. So John Brennan, former CIA director, comes before Congress and testifies under oath that he had no idea who wrote the Trump dossier, and that dossier formed the basis of no conclusions by the intel community. Seems very much like a lie, because the FBI knew exactly who wrote that dossier. I mean, he lied to Congress under oath. Is he going to face perjury charges for that? And if not, why not?
Well, one of the things that we did today is we sent out a questionnaire, and we're asking several former and current officials to answer 10 simple questions. And these are questions that the public not only should know and have a right to know, but I think they want to know. And that is, when did you learn about the dossier? When did you learn that it was paid for by the Democrats? When did you learn that this was a political piece? I mean, these are all questions that we should be able to get answers to, and we will. So part of what we sent out today with the questionnaire with 10 questions on it, also is a cover letter that says if you don't answer this, we're giving them a couple weeks to answer it, you will be subpoenaed and you will come before Congress to tell us when you knew about this.
But Brennan did already say what he said his piece, and it looks really clear that he lied. Do you think he lied?
Well, we don't know, right? I mean, we don't know the answer to, I mean, maybe he's telling the truth. I don't know. Did he not know that the Democrats paid for the dossier? It's possible. Now, one of the things he said on another show was that he knew that press people were talking to him about the dossier in 2016. Now, we don't know who those press people were. It's possible he didn't know the Democrats paid for it at that time.
Huh. Maybe.
But clearly he knew about the dossier way back in 2016.
Yeah. In 2016, because we know State Department people also knew about it. There was another member of Congress. Let's try to fit him in, Joey. There's another member of Congress that is on this committee, and he's going to be talking about phase two in the dossier probe. And then when we go to the break, come back from the break, we're going to read the 10 questions to you.
chairman of the Intel Committee in the House, puts together 10 questions, Congressman, and he wants some answers. Who are the people that he wants answers from?
Well, I can't tell you who the people are right now. I think you're pretty close on some of the people that you have suspected there at Fox News. We'll keep that close to the vest at this time and give those people an opportunity to answer some very serious questions that we have. What did you know? When did you know it? What did you do about it? And that's the basic tenet of it. I mean, you know the questions. I think they're good questions. You know, how are we ever going to have any trust in our government? And I hope that the people that we're asking are completely transparent. If you got nothing to hide, you'll answer those questions without having to be subpoenaed.
So we're trying to find out. We're trying to find out the dossier, the role it played. And the CIA director said he doesn't know anything about it, doesn't know the role he played. I imagine other people in the White House are going to say, from the previous White House, are going to say, I don't think he didn't play a role. The only way we're going to find out is if we see the application to the FISA court or the judge comes forward with that paperwork. It's been requested by the New York Times as well as your committee. Where are we at with this?
Well, we're continuing to drive. We've been stonewalled on so many of these issues over time. And frankly, I think that people like Christopher Wray and Rod Rosenstein, they have an opportunity to make it their finest hour if they are willing to come forward and say, you know what, we have a lot of great people in our agencies, but we may have a problem. And we need to dig into this and bring it forward to the American people so that possibly we could someday trust those that are in our government, elected or non-elected.
You know, this Russia collusion thing, they put so much stock in the fact that Russia has some type of influence on an election, and they're not, but they won't talk about the Steele dossier whatsoever. They won't even mention it. And how that was being used to influence an election, and that information came from Russia. Let's listen to the second part of this congressman talking.
Adam Schiff, has he shown any curiosity towards these same questions that you have put out? Because he, by the way, did say his 10-page dossier, he thinks he's going to clean it up and release it this week. But go ahead. Has anyone on the Democratic side looked at this and said, this bothers me too?
I have not heard that yet. What I have seen for the past year from some of the people, not all of them, but from some of the people, is they wrote the end of this story before we began the investigation, and then they're trying to make it fit their narrative. And as we've been going further, right, we're finding out it's not fitting into their narrative. And as far as their document, we did what they asked us to do, was to get ours vetted, and they haven't done that when they said they were going to. And then they tried to make a play with the White House to pin it on the White House. The White House, right, was appropriate to say, we're not going to say anything until you get it vetted by the appropriate people.
This is Winstrup, a member of Congress. First time I've ever seen him. He is very good. He is staying straight down the line. I'd like to see him on another show where he may have more of an adversarial role than Brian plays. Don, coming back to you, and we'll read the 10 questions. Dan Moore Show, we'll be back.
The Dan Morris Show.
Carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
Hey there, this is Kim Williams with Alabama Home Mortgage. Are you currently paying rent? Why? When you could be investing in your own home. I've got some news just for you. Alabama Home Mortgage is now offering a program that will allow you to purchase your home with only 1% down. You heard me right, 1%. Don't waste your money on rent when you can afford to buy. 1 month's rent could get you into your dream home today. You don't have 1%? Small changes can result in big savings quickly. Skip the coffee and you can buy a house. Did you know that just one year's worth of lattes could get you that 1% you need to get in your dream home? Alabama Home Mortgage can get you pre-approved, closed, and moved into your new home with only 1% down. Sounds like magic, right? Well, pick up the phone and let us wave our magic wand as we turn renters into homeowners. Call me, Kim Williams, at 567-4223 or visit us online at alahomemortgage.com. That's alahomemortgage.com to see just how much home you can afford. NMLS 3723 74, Equal Housing Lender.
Accidents come in all sizes, from the little parking lot ding in your door, to the next-door neighbor's kid and his skateboard, to the full-blown uh-oh in traffic. Precision Body and Paint can handle all of your... Precision Body and Paint has been repairing dings, scrapes, and crashes in the River Region since 1986. They pride themselves on quality, affordable auto body repair. They fix your vehicle right the first time. Precision's technicians have years of experience, and their goal is 100% customer satisfaction. Remember, if you are in an accident, it's your choice which collision repair facility repairs your car. Insist on Precision Body and Paint. 4245 Atlanta Highway. Estimates are free, and Precision Body and Paint works with all insurance companies. They handle collision repair, auto glass and mirror repair, hail damage, or body trim repair. So if you have a... or even a little door ding, call Precision Body and Paint at 277-2080. Like them on Facebook. Remember, Precision Body and Paint won't sleep until your car is perfect.
Live, local talk. The River Region's most trusted voice for news and opinion. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Dan Morris Show.
Let's go to the phones and let's go to Don. Don, welcome aboard the Dan Morris Show.
Dan, did you hear they want to close down Winn-Dixie?
I'm sorry?
Did you hear they want to close down Winn-Dixie?
Well, they're going to close some of them down.
My dad worked at one. He was born in 1918, a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
If he's alive, he'd be 100 years old.
You're right. So, look at Woolworths or look at Sears. I mean, things come and go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. Smoking Otis, your own.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon.
How y'all this afternoon?
Really good.
Good.
Good, good. Look, this Steele dossier and the Democrats and Republicans going back and forth reminds me of a chess game, Dan. Now, if this is a chess game, where are we at? Are we at check yet, almost a checkmate, or what's going on with it?
You're talking about the collusion story?
Yeah.
No,
not the Russian collusion. I'm talking about the dossier and...
We're not anywhere near checkmate.
Is that right? So we still way back, a lot of plays to be made.
Well, you have a lot of things that have to happen simultaneously. I mean, it's not just a Steele dossier; it's what somebody did with it and how did they present
right,
it and
right.
those type of things.
Right, and I know that the Democrats are doing their more or less a rebuttal. I don't think that's going to amount to anything. I think everything just seems to be a smokescreen thrown up just to try to get keep the truth from coming out. You know, you got the, they were going to go back and bet their rebuttal, and of course Trump denied it the first time, let it go through, and it just seems all that's just hanging everything up instead of going forward with the deal, man. Everybody knows that as far as maybe Clinton and Obama had a part in this, and I'm just waiting to see somebody in an orange jumpsuit, Dan.
Yeah, well, like I said yesterday, you got to be patient here. You got to be patient. Smoking Otis, I got to go here. Let's read these 10 questions here real quick.
Okay, these are the ones Nunes came up with. Number one, when and how did you first become aware of any of the information contained in the Steele dossier?
Now imagine this is going to Brennan, this is going to Susan Rice, this is going to Clapper, this is going to a whole bunch of people.
Number two, in what forms was the information in the Steele dossier presented to you? By whom? Please describe each instance.
That's going to be interesting because then, you know, you get into McCabe, you get into Rojo, you get into a lot of different people, the people of the State Department. This is a blanket.
Number three, who did you share this information with? When? In what form? Please describe each instance.
Media and other people within government.
Number four, what official actions did you take as a result of receiving the information contained in the Steele dossier?
Did you go to a FISA warrant?
Right. Did you convene any meetings with the intelligence community and or law enforcement communities as a result of the information contained in the Steele dossier?
That's going to pull in Sally Yates. It's going to pull in Comey. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to Loretta Lynch.
Number six, when did you first learn or come to believe that the Steele dossier was funded by a Democrat-aligned entity?
Ding, 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 ding. Mm. Now, here's a question for you. Do they know the answers to the questions that they're asking?
Mm.
Do they know, if they, have they seen something that they're asking these particular people questions and they know the answer to that? I think that on some of these people, they definitely do. Keep going.
Number seven, when did you first learn or come to believe that the Steele dossier was funded by the Democratic National Committee and or Hillary for America, the Clinton campaign? Number eight, when did you first become aware that the Steele dossier was used to obtain a FISA order on Carter Page? Number nine.
I wonder how Susan Rice is going to answer that one.
Was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the dossier prior to January 5th, 2017? And number 10, did you discuss the information contained in the Steele dossier with any reporters or other representatives of the media? If so, who and when?
I think they know, and question number nine is the biggie. Was President Obama briefed on any information contained in the dossier prior to January the 5th, 2017? That is the date that he met with Comey, the Vice President, Susan Rice, and Sally Yates. Guys, we're going to be back. Chucky D, I'm not sure if I can get you in. We're going to try to get our guests on the phone. Dan Marshall, we're going to be back right after this.
You're listening to The Dan Morris Show on News Talk 93.1 WACB.
What do you get with Greg, Rich, Jay, and Emily Hayes? Three men and a lady. Mornings, 6 to 9 on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
I was having wings with my buddies the other night and left my debit card on the table. But I didn't stress. I have Card Valet from ASE Credit Union. Card Valet lets me turn my debit card on and off from an app on my phone anytime, anywhere, so my money is always safe. If my debit card falls into the wrong hands, I'll get a real-time alert so I can act fast and protect myself. Just another way ASE Credit Union helps me control my money. It's your money. ASE is your credit union. Federally insured by NCUA.
Brewmaker Motors, it's winter. Oh, the weather outside may be frightful, but the deals inside here are delightful. Besides, it will be soon very warm. Amelia Earhart said, "The most difficult thing is the decision to act. The rest is mere tenacity." So be tenacious this month and come on down to Brewmaker Motors for a luxury Infiniti, the QX30 subcompact SUV, or its opposite, the QX80. Big enough to carry just about anything you want to carry or pull in style. Our Prattville and Montgomery Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram stores, along with Fiat in Montgomery, trucks, 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 Jeeps, 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 lots of Pacifica minivans, Dodge Chargers and Challengers, all at the right price. Or Kia, the value proposition and the 2 years in a row J.D. Power's initial quality renter. Now with the 365 horsepower Stinger sedan arriving now in our showroom. The fantastic SUVs, the Sorento with the third row seating and the compact Sportage SUV, or the value price Forte sedan. All this and great service and parts only at Brubaker Motors.
Hey folks, Dave Ramsey here, creating a stylish, relaxing outdoor retreat for friends and family to enjoy time together can increase the appeal and value of your home. My friends at Southern Homes and Gardens offer many options for outdoor furniture in styles and prices for all budgets. In fact, Southern Homes and Gardens has the largest selection of quality outdoor furniture in the region. I'm talking about handcrafted furniture with rust-free, UV-resistant materials that are durable and timeless designs made to withstand the elements for years. Don't waste your hard-earned money on what's perceived as the lowest price in town, as it will end up costing you more in the long run. Quality outdoor furniture is a smart investment that not only enhances your home's value and curb appeal, but it will give you and your family years of enjoyment. Call 334-387-0440 or southernhomesandgardens.com.
News Radio, I'm Steve Rappaport, determined to teach lawmakers a lesson.
For the good of the students, the parents, the family, and the country, we beg for common sense laws.
Survivors of last week's school shooting in Florida rallying at the state capitol.
There was a small group from Stoneman Douglas High School that walked through here a short while ago to the applause of this group. Some onlookers were in tears at that, they say, because of the students' bravery. They say they are pushing for school safety that also involves gun control with other measures after traveling hundreds of miles, many coming from the funerals of their classmates.
Fox's Rich Edson in Tallahassee. President Trump will host a listening session on school violence with students, teachers, and parents today. One of the most influential figures in Christianity.
Before time began, he existed.
The Reverend Billy Graham has died. He was 99 years old. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Rich Thomas Weather, brought to you by Wiley Sanders Trucking, now offering a $1,000 sign-on bonus, great driver's pay package, and quarterly safe driving awards. Apply now at WileySanders.com.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Well, hi, everybody. We are back to record-breaking territory again today and for the next few days. For today, high temperature in the lower 80s. That should easily break the record of 80. A sun-cloud mix again with spotty showers possible. And then mostly cloudy tonight. Overnight low temperature 66. Tomorrow, rain chances under 20%. High around 83. That'll easily break tomorrow's record. Low 80s again on Friday, near the record. Then scattered showers Saturday, and showers and thunderstorms becoming more likely Saturday night into Sunday. With severe weather season approaching, time to get our free weather app on your phone or tablet. It has interactive radar down to the neighborhood level, plus instant push notifications for severe weather watches and warnings. Go to the App Store and search Rich Thomas Weather. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
The River Region's News Talk Station. News Talk 93.1, WACV. News Talk 93.1.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1, WACV.
And an interesting guest that's about to come on. He was on Fox and Friends yesterday. Did an excellent interview. I think he'll like this one better than the one with Brian. Let me bring in Major Scott Husing, the author of Echo and Ramadi, the firsthand story of the U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. Major, welcome aboard the Dan Morris Show.
Hey, Dan. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on the program.
It is great to have you here. First of all, I have your book up on my website at danmorrisshow.com so people can buy it as they're hearing you speak. But one thing that's interesting, tell the audience where some of the proceeds will be going from your book sales.
Part of the proceeds will go to a foundation called Save the Brave, and it's a certified 501c3. And Save the Brave helps connect veterans that are struggling with post-traumatic stress. And it was founded several years ago by one of my young Marines, Nick Velez, who was a young, tough machine gunner that fought alongside of me in Ramadi, Iraq in 2006. And he decided to start it up to really help veterans connect. And we feel that there's no better medicine than guys that have experienced what they have on the battlefield and done some of the things that they had to do to deal with some of that darkness and heal through connecting with other veterans with shared experiences.
So Save the Brave is what you're associated with will be receiving some of the proceeds, and that is outstanding.
Right.
Outstanding,
I'm the
Major.
Director. Yeah, I'm the executive director for SaveTheBrave.org, and you can find us there and learn more about this great organization.
Well, it truly is. And again, you can go to my website, danmorrisshow.com. You'll see his book featured up here. And I think you're going to want to buy it after you listen to the stories that he has. First of all, my audience is very familiar with Ramadi. We have a Middle East expert that comes on as we're doing the second battle of Ramadi. He would always come in and we'd be talking about what was happening there and how tough it was. But you were in the first battle of Ramadi. Let me kind of set this up. How did you get the orders to go into Ramadi? When you were briefed on Ramadi, how knowledgeable were you before you stepped into to the city?
Well, one correction, I was in the second battle of Ramadi.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the but the battalion, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, was also in the first Battle of Ramadi in 2004. Then I took command, and I was there in 2006 and 2007. So what was interesting is that I still had about 50 Marines within Echo Company that had fought in the first Battle of Ramadi. So it was very fortunate, Dan, to have those seasoned veterans. And for your listeners, when I say seasoned veterans, they may think these old crusty guys. No.
No.
They were now a seasoned 20, 21 years old. And that's something that most people don't understand is they're still kids, but they've already done multiple combat tours. And when we received our orders to fight in Iraq, we were standing on the flight deck of the USS Boxer. The Marine Expeditionary Unit commander, Colonel Brian Boudreaux, came out and he said, "We got our orders. We're going to Iraq. We're going to be part of the surge strategy." That was ordered by President George W. Bush and General David Petraeus to flood the battle space with an additional tens of thousands of troops. And we were a small component of that because we leveraged a component of the Marine Corps, which is a Marine Air Ground Task Force that makes up about 2,500 Marines, airplanes, landing craft, and infantry Marines.
So how tough was when you were looking at going into Ramadi, and I apologize for first and second. I was thinking you were the first, and then what had happened recently was the second, but that's actually the third. But how tough was the engagement? When you were looking at what your mission was, how hard was it going to be to get in there in the first place?
Well, when we were flown into country, the Army had already established a presence. And when the 15th MU was deployed, they really farmed out all of the units. Some went up north, some went out west to Western Elambar Province, and then two companies, Echo Company and Fox Company, that was commanded by my good friend John Smith. We were tasked to go to Ramadi, which was, at the time, the deadliest city of Iraq.
Right.
And that was just based off of timing, Dan. Nothing else. It's just this giant game of whack-a-mole, and the insurgents decided to take a stand. So the Army had already gained a foothold there with the 1st Brigade Combat Team, and we were farmed out to work for various different task force. And I was very lucky because the Army units that I worked for, Task Force 19 Infantry, commanded by Chuck Ferry, and Task Force 177 Armor, commanded by Bear Macchiato, they loved the Marines because we brought this element of aggressiveness and lethality to the battlefield. In addition to the fact that we had over 200 Marines in comparison to the Army, they wielded like what Bear called his blunt instrument of war. The Marines literally moved through the city in a very rapid manner, constantly fighting and attacking the enemy and knocking them on their heels. And they were extremely effective in doing that. And that success was also attributed to the fact that the soldiers we fought alongside had already laid the groundwork as we fought in some of the bloodiest fighting day in and day out, engaged with the enemy 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. And those soldiers were some of the most switched on soldiers I've ever worked with. And I give them as much credit because, you know, the time we spent in Ramadi and was a fraction of what Task Force 1 and Infantry spent, because they were there 8 months before we showed up. And then, even after we left, they remained another 10 months. They were extended. And so, you know, I like to think we helped, and we did make a difference in the city, and that was validated when I talked to the commanders of that unit. But I was very happy to be able to be a part of that team and to be able to make a difference in that hotbed of insurgency at the time in 06 and 07.
On the phone with us is Major Scott Husing. He is the author of Echo in Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. Let's talk about the tactics that the enemy was using. Had they already started doing the tunneling and things like that, and were they using different tactics there than they were in other provinces?
The tactics they used were hit and run, to simplify it. For most listeners, they fought in a city amongst the people where the front line was everywhere, Dan. We literally lived in the city amongst 90% of the population that wanted security. They wanted our protection, and they wanted a safe environment. And then the other 10% were comprised of about 5% hardcore insurgents and then 5% co-belligerents that really just wanted to make a name for themselves, I think. And when they chose to do that in Ramadi, it turned out to be a bad day for them because they lost. You know, we won Ramadi. I think that's indisputable. And I talk about that with some of my Vietnam vets, and we make comparisons of battles. But we absolutely won. And to say how we won is an interesting question. I don't ever say we won because we killed the most bad guys, but we brought peace and stability back to the country. And the tactics that the insurgents were using were very demoralizing through sniper fire, which has an immense psychological effect when you lose a soldier or a Marine to the effects of sniper fire. Roadside bombs were everywhere. Booby traps were in houses. We were constantly rooting out and seizing these massive weapons caches of rifles, explosive ordnance, and everything they used at the elementary level to try and counter the vast technology that the U.S. military machine brings to the fight. And we learned very quickly in the city how to best defeat them, and that was to operate at night because we owned the night, literally, through our optics and sensors. That's how we became so successful. And honestly, they just didn't want to fight us at night. They would go to ground, and when we did conduct raids and targeted hits on houses, we'd find these guys, we'd find the weapons, and we'd roll them up, we'd cuff them, and we'd detain them, and we'd push them through the detaining process back to the Army headquarters to be interrogated and dealt with. And then we moved on and continued to clear throughout the night. It was a very exhausting process, but very methodical as well.
That's interesting. So you're using our technology of Starbright and things like that and night optics, and you could see them. They couldn't see you. How was the intelligence that you were gathering, and were you getting that from the citizens there, or how were you? Was it organic or what?
Both. We had a very robust intelligence gathering machine from the Army. They would provide actionable intelligence for high-value targets that we had to conduct raids on, or high-value individuals that we needed to seek out and detain because they were key leaders within the city. And that was effective, and that was shared across the brigade and across the task force in Ramadi in concert with the special operators, the Navy SEALs through, you know, Team 5 and 6 that were operating within our zone, shared information. It was a very joint environment where we helped each other out. But as we did go through and those locals that we encountered, they did provide some information for us, but it was very hard to get useful information due to the fact that because the insurgency was so deeply rooted in the city, mm-hmm. there were constant threats of murder and intimidation from the insurgents to the local populace. So obviously they're very apprehensive, and if found out, it could be deadly for the citizens if they gave up information or were found to be helping the multinational forces or the coalition.
On the phone with us is Major Scott Husing. He is the author of Echo and Ramadi, the firsthand story of U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. You can get his book on my website, danmorrisshow.com. You can do it in the order now. It will get the cheapest price. It will show you the cheapest price for the book. How good was the fighter on the opposition? How would you rate them?
On a scale of 1 to 10, it was hard to gauge, to be honest with you. And I get that question a lot about what the enemy was thinking and how they operated and how well they were trained. And you know, that's a whole other story. Maybe that's a whole other book once we can sit down with the insurgents and say, hey, what was your methodology? What were your training tactics like? At the time, I didn't have the luxury of asking them. Maybe some of the interrogators did, but we were too busy hunting them and killing the enemy to survive on the battlefield and take care of all the Marines and soldiers. So they were very well trained, and there were times throughout our stay in Ramadi where they absolutely knew what they were doing. We were engaged one night in December for up to 5 hours by a very complex coordinated attack that was not only targeted at one of our positions, but multiple positions throughout the city, where they kicked off this large offensive to attack all of the firm bases of the Army and Marine units that were occupying the city. And that battle that night lasted for almost 5 hours. And we brought everything to bear, rockets, airstrikes, tanks from the Army, and the Marines were constantly engaged throughout the night in direct contact with the enemy as they tried to move on our positions, sometimes getting within hand grenade range and rocket-propelled grenade range to attack the Marines. And they fought back throughout the night, and we did lose some. We lost a Marine that night and several others wounded, but at the end of it, again, the Marines came out on top.
Guys, if you don't get how good this book is from listening to the major talk, I mean, this is what we call building thirst. That was a great description. Now, in that firefight that you were in that night, were you defending a fire base, or were you basically in a street-to-street fighting situation, or door-to-door?
Well, the way it worked is when we occupied a zone or an area of operation on the map, mm-hmm. we carved that out, and everybody had their own sectors. And you're very tight. You're compacted in there. And we picked key locations, and we called them firm bases, which meant we'd established a presence here, and we didn't ever plan on occupying them or staying at them for any given time. And we did that as well throughout our clearance operations. But they were essentially jump-off points where we could conduct operations. And we found that to be the most effective way, because we wanted to constantly be moving, Dan. We wanted to be constantly taking it to the enemy. And like I said before, knocking them on their heels and never letting them know where we were coming from. And we did that in central Ramadi. And then we did it again when we were tasked to clear an entire section of western Ramadi. And we were assigned to an armor task force with the Steel Tigers under Bear Johnson. And at that time, we rolled into the city, and I'll share a little bit about the book. When we showed up, I did my in-brief with the colonel, and he says, "Hey, Scotty, how many tanks do you want?" I said, "None." He goes, "Well, how many vehicles do you want?" I said, "None." He says, "Well, how are you going to get around the city?" And he looked at me with a little bit of disbelief, and I said, "Well, we're going to walk, sir. We're dismounted infantry." I said, "We're going to crawl around the city and pop out of every corner and every alley, and if there's an insurgent that wants to pick a fight with Echo Company, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, they're going to be in for a rough day." And that's how it played out. And he kind of laughed a little bit, but with pride, knowing that he was very happy to have his Marines within his task force, and they treated us well. And we gave him the leverage to establish more firm bases within the city to build police stations and recruitment centers for Iraqi police and army. And that was the goal of bringing us in as he dubbed this blunt instrument of war.
On the phone with us is Major Scott Husing. He is the author of Echo Ramadi, the firsthand story of the U.S. Marines in Iraq's deadliest city. Major, I need to go to a very quick break. I'm going to come back. I want to get more about how you would go in and take these sectors and then advance to a new location. I'm going to be back right after this.
The Dan Morris Show.
To liberty in our time, the Joey Clark Radio Hour, Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Hey there, I'm a dog. Now, I know we tend to eat things we probably shouldn't, but what you put in that food bowl really makes a difference. And dogs love it when you feed us Nutrina dog food from Prattville Farm Center. I love the taste and the energy it gives me, and you'll love it too, because it's made locally and won't hurt your wallet. Now, I've got squirrels to chase. See ya!
See the full line of Nutrina products at Prattville Farm Center, 1154 South Memorial Drive, or call 365-5400.
At Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars, it's all about buying confidence and trust. For over 50 years, they've offered a great selection of the finest and best hand-picked cars in the area. These cars have passed a rigid multi-point inspection and are backed by proof pricing and the Jack Ingram Signature Car stamp of approval. What is proof pricing? That's Jack Ingram's best price, simple and clear, with true price comparisons from third-party leaders. And when it comes to saving you money, there's nothing better than seeing the proof. Choose from the largest selection of Nissan, Volkswagen, Volvo, Audi, and Porsche-certified vehicles in our area, or shop hundreds of other pre-owned mates starting as low as $7,000. And if it doesn't fit in your garage or your spouse doesn't like it, you have 3 days to return it for a full refund. Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars has hundreds of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your needs. And if by some small chance they don't have it, they will find it for you and deliver it to your driveway. Confidence and trust is a Jack Ingram Signature Used Car guarantee.
Come see me, Tip James, at Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars on Eastern Boulevard, or shop online at jackingram.com.
HGTV's Eric Stromer.
Hey, everybody, this is Eric Stromer, and I want you to make sure to listen to House Does with Dale. That's my boy down there in Alabama, and if you don't listen, I'm going to get real, real mad at y'all.
You never know who Dale will talk to unless you listen.
Make sure you tune in each and every week, or I'm going to come after all of you with a 2x4.
1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out.
House Studs with Bobby T and Dale Johnson, Saturday mornings at 10 on News Talk 93.1 WACV, the voice of Montgomery.
Live local talk, the River Region's only 24-hour News Talk FM station. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
The Dan Morris Show.
Demo show on a Wednesday. We're going to do the drawing tomorrow because I'm just way too interested in Major Scott Husing and the interview with him. Echo and Ramadi, Echo Company and Ramadi. Major, let me get back to a couple of things. We have very little time here, but you were so interesting. Your book sounds absolutely spectacular. And when you would capture somebody, they would go into an interrogation pool, and then the intelligence group would start interrogating them and then signal information back to you?
Roughly, that's how the process went. And that was a contested friction point for us on the battlefield, too, because after the Abu Ghraib scandal, you know, how we handled detainees on the battlefield, the processing of them. Mm-hmm. There were very strict rules on, you know, how we detained them, how they were processed, the time we did it within. And to be honest, this is another challenge for a commander because infantry Marines aren't trained to do those type of missions to that level of granularity. And from probably a strategic or an operational level planning point is we really needed to have trained prison guards to handle this properly and to get the most information out of them. We were very lucky to have the Army's tactical human exploitation teams and Marine intelligence teams, human exploitation teams that did the actual questioning of detainees, but the handling and processing of them was very haphazard. And these were things that my young guys had to learn as they went, and they did it. And again, every time they mastered their art and they adapted and they improvised in a very fluid environment when they were constantly surrounded by chaos and this immense pressure that was always forced down upon them as they fought day in and day out.
So, Major, when you would go and take over a sector, kind of help us with what that looks like. You would go into the sector of the city of Ramadi, and then you would take over it, you would secure it, and then you would, like, build barriers in the streets and around the backs of houses, and then you would own that sector, and the Echo Company would control that, or would you bring in additional people? What did that look like?
Well, we had designated camps that were set up in the city that the Army had occupied and that the coalition forces occupied. When we went through and conducted clearance operations, we didn't stay because the people lived in the city. You have to remember that just like any neighborhood in Alabama, this is something that most Americans can't even comprehend. It would be like watching a bad episode of Cops on TV. to have a squad of Marines, you know, knocking your front door, tell you, hey, Dan, I hope you got some family or friends living close by because you're not staying in your house tonight. We're staying here. And we would occupy that house. We'd ask the family to leave because we just couldn't be responsible for their safety right. in the house, and we didn't want them being targeted. So they'd have to leave, and after a long night of patrolling, 12, 15 hours of patrolling, we'd hold up in a house within the city. The guys would get rest during the day, they'd clean weapons, and then we'd send out localized patrols. And then we would kick off the next day's operations and continue to press through the city. And it was extremely complex. And you're dealing with people. You're managing personalities.
Are we at a platoon level? What size is company. That group? Okay.
We were at Echo Company was at one point over 250 Marines with all of the soldiers, sailors, contractors, interpreters, dog handlers that we had. We had a ton of enablers with us that helped bolster our success on the battlefield.
But when you're in a house, how big was that unit?
Usually about 30 to 45 Marines and soldiers is how they would occupy. So it's pretty cramped living conditions. I mean, most people get a little anxious having in-laws over for the holidays. So you can imagine being jammed into one house. But sometimes it was two or three that were right next to each other, and we'd set up security and, conduct localized patrols. But, yeah, it's really where the science meets the art or vice versa. And, you have to learn as you go along, and there aren't ways to not do that. And it may sound a bit intrusive, but you can't live in the streets. You can't sleep in the streets. You can't dig fighting holes in an urban environment like you do on the open battlefield. It's just not how we operated. So we had to learn and adapt as we went along.
Real quickly, and my closing question is, when you looked at what happened Ramadi after Obama pulled troops and things like that and losing it again, how did that make you feel?
Well, again, we won Ramadi. And I think if you make a historical comparison, like the Tet Offensive, having been in the city, having 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines in the city twice, Dan, in 2006 and with the Army's presence, we won. And I don't say we won or lost by killing the most bad guys. My metric of winning is bringing the most Marines home alive. Mm-hmm. That's my real metric of success. But we punted it through the grand sins of life by turning it back over to Iraq. And I don't think anyone needed a crystal ball to look in and say, if we don't establish a solid presence in Iraq as this large, quick reaction force or deterrent force, we were going to be back. And again, just turn back the clock to May of 2015, where ISIS had comprised itself and reared its ugly head. And what city did they take? Ramadi, because it's the capital of Al Anbar province. And I don't think any of us were shocked. I don't think any of us say what we did, what we fought for, the Marines and soldiers that bled and died there were for naught, because we made a difference. And we don't fight policies. We don't fight strategies at that level. We fight the enemy. And that's what the Marines were absolutely masters of.
Major, I hate to interrupt you. You're going to be on the replay for Saturday, so I have to end it so I have it all fit into the show for Saturday. I want to thank you so very much for being on. Echo and Ramadi, folks, you can go to my website. You can pick up his book. It's